Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's hot. It's humid. It's peak summer, but football is in the air this week on Pod Like a Raven. We are recording this on a humid day in the Baltimore, Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, which normally would be like time to go to the pool, time to go to the beach. But we are here to talk about football because games are quickly approaching. The Ravens are in jerseys and those kind of comical looking but very safe helmets that they wear. They are running around, they are running routes, they are throwing footballs for the most part. And we are here to discuss what we have seen from training camp for the Ravens and other things throughout the NFL. I am Antonio Barbera, back after a little bit of a summer hiatus, which is fine, to talk football. I'm going to bring in my co-host, who I have not seen in quite a long time. So let's see what they've been up to. Starting off with Jace Evans. Jace, it's great to have you back here talking football on Pod Like a Raven. But what did your last month look like?
Not much. I haven't been up to much, to be honest with you, Antonio. I'm just kind of, living, working, dealing with the heat. First full summer back in Maryland, and it is hot. It is a lot hotter than it was last summer, which is fun here, I think. So dealing with that. But like you said, we're just a few days out from August here, and then the next month is football time. It's football season, the beginning of September. So it comes quick, even though, yeah, it seems hot and very unfootball weather-like right now. Pretty soon it'll start cooling off ever so slightly, and we'll be into it. And I am getting excited. We'll talk about it more, I'm sure, in just a moment. I went through the complete range of emotions of, I think this is already a lost season when Lamar was not practicing, to now I think we're back on a Super Bowl, potential Super Bowl path. So here I've been running the gamut, as I'm, want to do. So that's kind of where I guess my mental state is. But yeah, just kind of bouncing between those two ideas and getting myself excited for football.
And Tim Horsey. Tim, what have you been up to through the dog days of summer?
I'm glad you asked me second, because you asked Jace and I was like, oh God, what have I been doing? I went to, or I was covering the Euros and Copa America for work, and then ended up going to the only city in Ohio, which I consider livable and fine, Columbus, Ohio. Columbus, Ohio, great city. Second time in about 6 months or so that I've been there, because they hosted MLS Cup, and then last week, MLS All-Star Game. And Columbus, lovely town. And guess what? For those of you that probably, and rightly so, might not like the Ohio State University, I am a full convert. I actually got, I haven't told these guys yet, but based with work, I was able to get in contact with their athletic department. And they gave me and my staff, including a man who lives in East London, who does not understand the concept of college sports, the full rundown of the Ohio State Athletic Facility outside of the football locker room and weight room. Those were the only two that were off limits. We ended up shooting hoops with the actual basketball team with the head coach, who I still don't know his name because it's a first year, but he was there. We went onto the field at the Horseshoe, which it seats 104,000 people. We took batting practice with the baseball team, which was really, really cool. So, you know, I've said some things about Ohio on this podcast, mostly negative. I will defer all those comments when it comes to Columbus. Columbus, great place. Sort of go Buckeyes, but not really. And yeah, the rest of Ohio, you know how I feel about you. But yeah, it's been a busy summer and kind of getting back into the swing of things. And I tell you what, we were just talking off air. That first preseason game is very close. And God love the Orioles, but they've been struggling a bit recently. So it kind of feels like this is the right time for football to start seeping into our brains, where our brains are like, you know, you get left brain, right brain, we get orange brain, purple brain. Like that's where we're at now. It's the best time of year, man. Let's talk about it. I can't wait to talk some Ravens with you guys.
That first game does always sneak up every year.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But it's important. Tim, you're absolutely right, because it just reminds us that football is there, and football, more important football, is coming right around the corner. And then those 3 weeks of those preseason games then seem to fly. But still a few weeks to go for that. But what has happened is 1 week of Ravens training camp, and we are just kind of check off a few boxes of what we have seen, what we have read over the last couple of weeks, some to do with training camp, some to do with personnel, some to do with just some great quotes that we always hear this time of year that mean everything and nothing. But we'll start with maybe the funnest, and what's apparently sent Jace to the depths of despair at some point in his back and forth. Training camp starts, a lot of excitement, Lamar Jackson, sick, doesn't play, doesn't really show up, tries to show up, sick again, misses almost a week, it was like 3 or 4 days of training camp, which we'll have Jace take this one, because we kind of know how it impacted him, but not really the biggest deal, Jace, in theory, but certainly you would like to see your quarterback there at the beginning of training camp and not having something that seems to happen to him far more often than with any other NFL player.
Yeah, that's the part that's just sort of ate at me a little, Antonio, is, you know, you get this report he's sick, and you're like, all right, well, he's sick all the time. I think he's missed at least one practice, like, literally 4 seasons in a row due to illness or something like that. So this is not a new thing with him. He has a weak immune system somehow. We know these things, but you know, you can't speculate too much of what it is. I have some assumptions given he was sent home by the team, kept out for 3 days of practice. They were doing tests. He came back, wasn't feeling well, left, missed another day. And then he came back and everyone said, oh, he's great again. Certainly seems like, you know, COVID perhaps, but we'll never know for sure. But the fact that this has happened at least twice now, this is the second time he's like missed the start of training camp due to illness of some type. And we know it was COVID the first time it happened. I don't remember when that was, either 2022 or 2021. So just like, I don't know. It just seemed like just starting training camp on such the wrong foot. You're so excited, you know, for football to start. And then it's just like, and you know, day one, we have this like really like eloquent 2-minute response from John Harbaugh about like the vision of Lamar's career, and everyone's misconstrued that on the sports talk shows and just, you know, took that wherever they want to go. And I thought that was cool. And then it's like, oh, you get this great defense of your quarterback from your coach. And then it's like, oh, but the actual quarterback's out here. He's sick for like the next three and a half days, 4 days, and just out the first week. Again, I don't think it matters in the grand scheme, but it did just send me down a little bit of a, you know, here we go again rabbit hole. Because when, you know, he last missed training camp or part of training camp because of COVID, he got hurt at the end of the year, and it was a miserable season all around. And again, I don't remember, I should have looked this up, if it was 2021 or 2022. It was one of those seasons, and both of those seasons stunk. And I, after coming off a, you know, 13-4 season that was largely very enjoyable, it just, you know, I thought there were, you know, could have been better signs to start your training camp off with, I guess. So it wasn't how you wanted to start. He's gotten back. By all accounts, he looks great. The offense got thoroughly dominated by the defense when Lamar was not there. By all accounts in practice, not really surprising with Josh Johnson as your backup. But, you know, he's back. He's looked good, apparently. So I don't think it's... at this point, he's a seven-year veteran, so I'm not actually that worried about, like, Lamar Jackson catching up to speed. But it was more just, like, what him being sick yet again to start a training camp. Just, like, a bad omen, basically, that I couldn't shake and got me worried for a few days. Until, again, I'm stupid, so he came back and everyone's like, offense looks great. And I'm like, we're back. We're so back. So that's kind of was just my little... journey. I didn't want to blow up the group chat with too much of those stupid thoughts kicking around my head. But,
it hasn't stopped you before.
No, but yeah, I mean, even for me, I was like, okay, I'm freaking out about nothing here, but, you know, it just would be nice to, like, when you look around the league and the other 31 quarterbacks aren't sick to start training camp, that's kind of nice. And the fact that we've done this with him before... I was mildly annoyed, I guess I'll say.
No, Tua's just delivering Jerry Maguire lines, which we're going to get to later in the show, which I'm sure that won't come back to bite him. This is one of those ones where I've told both of you, I've told friends, I've told family, you know, offline, that I love working in sports, but part of me is really glad. I love soccer, don't get me wrong, and I love covering soccer, but part of me is glad I don't work in the sport that I love the most. Because sometimes I can unplug. I missed a lot of this, and I'm so glad. Like, you pay attention, and then you get Jace. He blew it up a little bit, guys. He's kind of playing a facade here. I know, I'm just kidding. But you see some of the angst around Lamar missing out, and then Harbaugh defending him. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody was comparing the Harbaugh quotes to something that somebody said about Lamar Jackson years ago about him being a very special talent. I can't remember exactly who it was. I apologize. But I was super glad to be able to just decompress from all of this because, you know, in the middle of Jace's rant, I was like, I'm going to skewer him for being annoyed about this. But he got to the roundabout point of, in the end, it doesn't freaking matter. And he comes back and everything's fine. Look, if we're in week 12... or week 13, 14, we're late in December, and all of a sudden it's like, Lamar Jackson is missing Wednesday and Thursday practice because of mystery illness, and they've got, like, the Bills coming up, or whoever it is. I don't have the schedule in front of me. Then we got a little bit more of a problem. And guess what? That's probably going to happen, so we're going to have that problem. But right now, I just... And I know this sounds bad as a man who is speaking on a Ravens podcast. I'm glad I get to disconnect from that part of it to be like, I don't have to... worry about this right now. Is it a little concerning that he definitely got COVID again? Yeah, like a little bit. But at the same time, the sun's out. It's like July. I'm trying not to worry about Lamar Jackson illnesses because I know that's going to come later in my life.
I'll just glass half full it. I hope it was COVID because I would think that maybe now he'll have six months immunity. And that's the... That's a timetable that we like. It just set him right until right until late February for the next
bout. Just gets sick right before the Super Bowl.
Don't speak this evil into the world.
All right. Next up on the list is I'm going to make it a two-parter, and it is not training camp related. It is personnel related. Two additions that the Ravens made right before training camp, or maybe even after it had started, technically. First is the re-signing of Daryl Worley. Just a glue guy, just a special teams ace glue guy, an important back end of the roster addition. But the bigger news, slightly bigger news, is they also signed Eddie Jackson, the free safety formerly of the Chicago Bears, played 7 seasons with the Bears, had a kind of a torrid start to his career as a 2-time Pro Bowler in his first 3 years in the league. Then kind of, you know, I'm not going to say falls off, but certainly has had a quieter second half of his career than the first half. And now joins the Ravens on a 1-year deal. He's basically the third safety for this team. He's just going to take Geno Stone's role and, like, dare I say it, but I'd rather have the resume of Eddie Jackson than the resume of Geno Stone, like, today for this role, also making less money than Geno Stone will be making with the Bengals. I'm into it. I'm kind of into this move as kind of a strengthening of a position group that they have year after year said that is very, very important to them.
I love this move. I think this is... it was one of those ones where when it happened, our group text was just kind of like a, oh, okay. Like, the Ravens always have typically made these late, and even later than, you know, as we sit here, July 29th, July 30th, as you're listening, because you listen on day one, because you are a faithful listener to Pod Like a Raven, even when we take a couple weeks off. This was one of those ones that hit pretty hard for me. I think we've talked in previous episodes how important this third safety role is going to be for this team because of the dynamics of the other two safeties. Let's start with Marcus Williams. The easy part of the Marcus Williams thing, ever since he got to Baltimore, he's been hurt, which sucks, but it's kind of the reality of the situation, so you need somebody to cover for him. But more importantly, the Kyle Hamilton role. I saw something from Pro Football Focus, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. He essentially, if you take away the D-line, he played every other position on the field. Slot corner, outside linebacker. He played like 40 snaps of middle linebacker when they're in light packages. Both safety roles. Inside corner, outside corner. He is so versatile as a chess piece, and I think they know this. You know, Zach Orr, who is now the defensive coordinator for this team, was here last year. He knows how Mike McDonald used him. He knows how important that guy is. And you know what you need to move him into those slots? You need another safety on the back end. You need an Eddie Jackson. So think about this in theory, right? You have Marlon Humphrey on one side, and even though he might be better as a slot corner, he kicks out. Brandon Stevens in a contract year, who also had a great season last year and looks just a stereotypical Raven that's going to get overpaid by the Carolina Panthers next offseason. He's on the other end. You have Kyle Hamilton that kicks inside. And you're able to put Eddie Jackson, two-time Pro Bowler, former All-Pro safety, next to a, God willing, healthy Marcus Williams. That's before any of the other secondary options you have. That is a damn good back end for the defensive side of the football. You know, some of the concerns with Eddie Jackson, obviously, it's a foot injury that's been keeping him, I say out, but here's the point. It's been keeping him, quote unquote, out since 2021. He's had a foot injury three seasons in a row here, 2021, 22, 23. 2021, he played 14 games. 22 and 23, he played 12 games each. It ain't like he's missing a lot of time. And guess what? Here, he's asked to be a backup. This is a, again, two-time Pro Bowler, one-time All-Pro, who is basically a defensive turnover specialist for Chicago. I know a lot of it happened early in his career, but those teams back in 2018, 2019, when those defenses were really good, he was the guy getting the ball, hands on the ball all the time for the Chicago Bears defense. And now you get this guy and you ask him to play a significantly lesser role, I guess, where we're basically getting a guy who's too good for what he is. It's like if you have a guy at work who's really, really good at what he does, but there's just no room to get him promoted, and all of a sudden he's just hitting this wall, this wall, this wall. He's got all these skills. He's got all these things he can do, but there's no room for advancement. For the employer, that's kind of a good thing. That's kind of where they want you, because they're basically not paying you for all the skills that you have, and that's what Eddie Jackson is for me. So I think, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, this could be the turning point signing, but for a defensive secondary that had some questions, especially how are you going to get, for me anyway, the biggest one, how are you going to get the most out of Kyle Hamilton, a guy that can move around the field, that can be this, as I've said before, and you're going to be bored with me saying it throughout the season, queen on the chessboard, where he can do everything. He can only do everything if you have a guy that can replace him on the back end, and Eddie Jackson does just that. I think it's a brilliant signing.
Yeah, I think it's a really low risk, you know, moderately high reward move. Apparently, they're only paying him something like $1.5 million, is the number I've seen thrown around. And,
like, guys, Geno Stone, by the way, Geno Stone is making this money because he had like four gimme picks in the first 5 weeks of the season. Let's not kid ourselves here. And you get Eddie Jackson for less money doing the same role, probably better. It's a coup.
And the deal Geno Stone got was a 2-year deal for $14 million. So that's a considerable pay raise for, you know, a player I think, and I'll admit, I haven't exactly been locked into the Bears the last several years, but I, on paper, if you just ask me who's a better player, Eddie Jackson or Geno Stone, I'd say Eddie Jackson. Like, this guy, as Tim said, a former All-Pro, a two-time Pro Bowler, and it's, you know, been a several years since then, but as your number three safety, and for what you're paying him, that's completely fine. He's a, you know, extremely competent veteran, 100 games started in his career. They're going to be able to plug him in. And yeah, I do think there were probably better safeties on them. Like, Quandre Diggs is still out there. Justin Simmons is still out there. But they can probably land starting jobs with some team out there, or at least, like, number two, or, like, you know, roles like that. As Tim laid out, we have our two guys. We have Kyle Hampton and hopefully Marcus Williams the whole year. And if we don't have Marcus Williams the whole year, maybe Eddie Jackson could step in. I think it's good insurance either way. And so, yeah, I think it's a great signing. I don't have too much to add to it. I just, it's a very, you know, this was one of those we've joked about when over the years, but, you know, when it made it, I think it might have even been Schefter said, like, a typical Ravens signing or whatever. But it really is. Like, it's a veteran player at, like, a discount price who, like, will play. You'll see them a lot. They do three safeties all the time. That's why Geno Stone was on the field all the bunch and got a bunch of picks. And so, yeah, I think it's a great, a great player at a great price. And yeah, it's certainly cheaper than you would have spent on a guy like Quandre Diggs or Justin Simmons, probably. But you're getting a 30-year-old veteran who knows what to do, is entering his, what, eighth season. And you're probably not going to have to worry about him too much. Unless he's, you know, suddenly completely cooked, which I doubt. But if he is, you have him for 1 year, so who cares? So I think it's a great signing. Yeah, I was. It was one of those ones that when they signed it, I didn't feel that strongly either way. But the more I've sat on it, the more I really like it. I think it's a very solid move, and it's you know, it's extremely hard to find any fault with it, at least from where I sit.
Turning back to training camp and turning again to more defenders, and two of them pairing them again. This is sort of a negative angle, but two rookies for the Ravens who are both on the defensive side of the ball and both really have not had any time to impress, to grow, to gel, to get coached up, to, you know, run through plays and all that and get snaps, are Adisa Isaac and TJ Tampa, the third and fourth round picks, linebacker and corner, respectively. Usually it's a very bad sign when, and this is due to injury, both of these players not being able to play and sort of, you know, gel with the defense. Usually it's a bad sign when rookies do not have these early reps to get up to speed of what professional football is like. The differences are maybe when you're a first-round talent and they're going to kind of push you into the role when you are healthy, but when it's third and fourth rounders, they will find other players to kind of take those snaps and to get those reps and maybe move higher up on the depth chart. So a little bit disappointing for two different players that I think we thought could have had some good, you know, I'm not trying to just write their obituaries right now, but two players that could have provided something to this team even earlier in their career, certainly as rookies, are now kind of be climbing uphill in order to do that, at least in the short term.
For me, just quickly, I think it just sucks because of the window that the Ravens have of, like, this is a win-now mode. You know what I mean? Where we talked about it in our depressed state multiple episodes back, you know, after the whatever happened. I still can't stomach saying it. That the window is now for this team, and the window closes quicker than you ever think. And, you know, you get a guy like TJ Tampa who was like a questionable first round, early second round guy that falls to the fourth. You're like, steal, gonna be a contributor, gonna be one of those guys we're in late, you know, late November, early December, and he's making plays, and it's like, how did DaCosta snag this guy? You know, same with Adisa Isaac. I don't see them making any sort of impact this year, which sucks for a team that is ready to win now, is kind of the simplest way to put it.
Yeah, and for me, it's Tampa especially. He's currently on the PUP list. Now, I don't know, admittedly, if that automatically means he's on the miss four games PUP list. Like, I don't know if that's, if you're still on it come August 27th or whatever that date is, to get the roster down to 53. But it seems like he's going to miss time. He had abdominal surgery, like sports hernia surgery, right after the mini camp. So it doesn't seem like he'll be back anytime soon, and it certainly seems like this season's going to be a wash, which, like Tim said, it's like, and we were just talking about with Eddie Jackson, you know, the position everyone gets hurt in all the time is the secondary. So to have one of these secondary guys you thought might be able to step in and fill that spot, kind of a bummer. You know, ironically, one of the guys Jeff Zeribic pointed out had a great first week was a guy who's been in a very similar boat to Tampa, which is Jalen Armour Davis, who's been basically hurt nonstop his first two seasons. Apparently looked great, but, you know, he being hurt, he just, it's, as you guys said, it's hard for rookies to see the field anyway. I think that's especially true with a John Harbaugh team and a veteran team that is designed to win now. And when you're just not out in training camp, it's just hard for me to imagine them playing any meaningful role until like November, December, if that, at that point. So yeah, it's kind of a bummer for them. Obviously they're not going to get like cut or anything. They'll be on the team, but yeah, my expectations of them having any real impact this season has kind of gone out the window.
All right, let's get back now to things that don't matter. But I find them entertaining, so I'm bringing them up anyway. We heard about the Lamar Jackson weight loss. He lost like 10-15 pounds lighter. I loved that. I want him running away from people again, or even more so than last year. However, a new one came out, and that's Marlon Humphrey, who has said that he is 10 pounds lighter, and he's excited about it. That, to me, is the veteran NFL player who's now losing weight because they feel like they're maybe a half step slower, and I don't like this. I don't like it at all. I remember, I feel like Ray Lewis did it like three different times in his career as he got into the later stages. Like, oh, he dropped 10-15 pounds. He's lean and mean. When really it just was, he needed to drop weight because he didn't have the same speed that he had years prior. Kind of feels like that's what's happening with Marlon Humphrey. And then he's going to end up getting, like, just kind of run over by a running back in week three or something like that, and we're not going to like it. But hopefully, you know, I'm wrong about this. Hopefully this is just Marlon Humphrey, you know, getting lean and mean and getting that body fat percentage down even lower than what it was before. But I just found it funny because I enjoy the summer stuff of, you know, the best shape that he's ever been in. He's eating healthy. He's on the keto diet or Mediterranean diet or whatever it is. So that's my update. Marlon Humphrey, 10 pounds lighter. I'm a little concerned.
For me, I think it means that my man has stopped eating and posting Instagram stories at Tagliata's. I think he stopped going to Tagliata's because if you haven't seen in Marlon Humphrey's social media, it looks like he has been wifed up, as the kids call it. So congratulations to him. I think I stopped following Marlon Humphrey because I got annoyed of all the social posts. So maybe that's changed, but the last time I saw. And if you remember, Marlon used to spend most of his time posting food on his Instagram stories, which, hey, good on him. I eat a cheeseburger. I gained 15 pounds. My man can, because he is a professional athlete at the peak of his powers, he can house whatever he wants and not gain a single pound. But for me, like, look, in all seriousness, I think it's still a good thing. Marlon was always a bigger corner, so it's not like he's not going to end up looking like Emmanuel Forbes, where he turns sideways and all of a sudden you can't see him anymore. I think something needed to change for a guy that got paid like one of the top corners in the National Football League. You know, he's kind of just been good, not great, and I think we need him to be great again. So is this change going to help? I certainly hope so, but who's to say until the ball gets out there?
My other favorite.
Well,
oh, go ahead, Jace. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, apparently Marlon has actually been pretty good in preseason or training camp. He has picked Lamar off four different times. I don't know if that says more about Lamar or Marlon, but, you know, if he can somehow, if his lighter weight actually translates to him undercutting the ball more or whatever, that wouldn't necessarily be like the worst thing in the world. I did see one other just Marlon thing. I don't know if you guys saw this, but the idea of him switching to safety at some point came up, which is also, I don't know, Antonio, a little bit of a red flag, because you're kind of like, does that mean he thinks he's slower now? He's like, huh, wouldn't it be cool if I played safety one day because I can't cover these guys on the outside? That just gave me, I'll say, that gave me more pause than the weight thing. Be like, well, if you're already thinking about a potential future at safety, maybe your time playing cornerback is nearing its end. But, I mean, he's been, what, this is his eighth season now? Ninth? So I guess it would make sense. The quarterback's a hard position to play, that he has a future maybe at safety. And I'll say if he is a safety in the future, it'll probably be playing for another team, because the Ravens have a guy named Kyle Hamilton who's an all-pro safety who's 22 years old. So, yeah. I guess long story short for me, I guess I'm not going to be shocked if this is the last season we see Marlon Humphrey on the Ravens. I think there's some mounting evidence that it might be heading this direction. We'll see. But that being said, he's still their number one quarterback until, Wiggins proves otherwise. So interception passes this year, shuts some guys down, bounce back from what you did last year. That's my message for Marlon Humphrey.
My other favorite quote, whatever, discussion topic of the summer is, this was after day two of training camp, and we got the Odafe Owe is in the backfield every play, and I almost threw my phone across the room. It was Harbaugh, I think Harbaugh quotes is just going to have to make a comeback this season as a segment, because I enjoy it, and I think he's got some good ones going again, because he's starting strong in the summer with, I don't have the quote in front of me, but it was something like, we had to talk to him to, like, slow him down a little bit, or, like...
Antonio, I've got it here for you. I'll give you the full thing here and then let you two go off, because I can't say anything other than I'm going to beat my head against this and concuss myself, because I just can't stand the... This is one of those guys where it just has to happen. Here's from Jeff Zeribek's stock up, stock down piece. Ready? Quote, Odafe Owe. The fourth-year player's roster spot is plenty secure, but he's playing like a guy who believes he needs to have a great camp to make the team. Owe has been the most impactful player on the field. He was so disruptive last week that Coach John Harbaugh, quote, had to pull the reins in on him a little bit during one practice. Owe was making it difficult for the offense to get anything done. Owe, the 2021 first-round pick who has 13 sacks in three seasons, has looked dominant in training camp before. But that doesn't mean you dismiss what he's doing in this training camp. He looks in great form, and that's good for a Ravens team that needs him to break out. Bull, I don't feel like editing this. Just bull, I don't feel like editing this. I need to see it week one against the Kansas City Chiefs. He comes out with three sacks of Patrick Mahomes. I still need to see more, but I'm plenty pleased. This Odafe, the Odafe Owe, he looks great in camp talk. It's the same reason they drafted a guy who had zero sacks in his final year at Penn State, because he looked great. That's all he's a physical specimen. He looks great. It looks like he's been training. I can't do it.
Yeah, he always looks great. That's his whole thing.
Literally his whole thing. Yeah.
Got him drafted. He's a Greek god of a man physically, but does he know how to play football? We're still trying to figure that out. 4 years in now, 3 years in. It's 4 years in. This is his fourth season, and he has 13 sacks in 3 years. And he's shown flashes here and there, because he is physically talented, but, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but just about, how for as fast as he is, he somehow doesn't seem to, close the gap on a guy who's moving, 4 miles an hour, rookie season, but maybe Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah, no, Ben Roethlisberger's still there, shuffling away from him somehow at, the last second, and you're just like, what is happening here? I feel like it comes off sometimes, certainly for me, but probably all of us, but me especially, I feel like it sounds like I'm rooting against him, and I'm not. I'd love him to have a 15 sack season.
We want to be proven wrong. We want to look bad. Make us look terrible.
It would help every single one of us if he proved us wrong.
Yeah, it would help so many things with this team if he just is like, hey, here's 15 sacks. And you're like, wow, that's more than anyone's had for our team in 15 years, or since whenever Doomerville had that one season he went off. And so, it'd be great. But, I'm just going to believe it when I see it. Because, Jeff pointed out in his piece, it's just we have seen him dominate training camp before. He does this every year because he looks great on the practice field. And then the games start and, it's I don't know. He's just not getting around the league's good left and right tackles.
Well, Jeff also said, but that doesn't mean you can discount what he's doing in this camp. Yeah, it does. That is exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to completely discount what he's doing in this camp until I see it against real players in a real game situation.
And the thing, the only thing that he's basically not allowed to do in camp is the thing that he has struggled with the most in his entire career. It is that last step, that close, that tackle, that if you guys have ever seen any of those clips of these guys practicing, the linemen, whoever, they don't even, like, it's not even that they two-hand touch the quarterback. They literally, if they have beat their offensive linemen and they have a straight line at the quarterback, they just run, like, 3 yards behind him and just keep running. That's the issue. So don't tell me that I have to now believe that this guy's figured out the magical thing that he has struggled with in his three-year career that he's not even doing at this point. I love it. I hate it. I want to be wrong. Make me look terrible, Odafe. 10 weeks from today. All right, what else do we have? Important stuff. Real stuff now. Let's address the biggest issue, and I mean that kind of literally and figuratively, the biggest issue that this team has, the interior of the offensive line, two guard spots up for grabs. And there's a lot of guys fighting for these spots, but is there a lot of quality fighting for these spots and what the status is of those two? So, Tim, what have you noticed here, or what do you have to share about this, this competition where we're not really clear on the talent level to begin with?
So I think one of the things that we've talked about a lot, and me specifically, over the course of Pod Liquor Raven, the more specifically transitioning into this new season, is the turnover in the offensive line. You know, Morgan Moses and John Simpson both go to the New York Jets. Kevin Zeitler signs with the Lions. And a unit that was very strong is now down to hopefully a good Ronnie Stanley, which you can never tell. And then the all stout team buying the black jersey very soon, 64 Tyler Linderbaum at center. And that's kind of it. And then you know, we talk about the draft. They get Rosengarten out of Washington, who is, it seems like, a very solid plug-and-play right tackle. Who knows with that? You also have Patrick McCarry, who can play that right tackle role. They love him as a utility lineman, but, like, if he needs to start the year with that rookie Rosengarten there, he can. And so the conversation kind of becomes about the guard positions. Andrew Voorhees, who they drafted not this past draft, but the 2023 draft out of USC because he tore his ACL, was a tackle at USC, but they're kind of seeing him as a guard. And frankly, right now, is the preeminent starter at left guard as we're very early into camp. You know, obviously, Ben Cleveland is still kicking around and still just is too busy hunting wild boar to care about earning a starting role for the Baltimore Ravens, which blows my mind. That guy named Sala out of Oregon, which we're just going to go with that, the sixth round pick last year, also in the mix. But another man has earned, or not, maybe not earned, but another man has come into the fold in the guard position. And usually, for those of you, I mean, look, I'm no offensive line guru. It's just what I like to watch in the football field. But usually the guards are a little bit smaller, right? Your centers are kind of small, and your guards are smaller, and then your tackles are the big dudes. And it, relatively, obviously. But the guards, because they have to pull and they have to move around, they got to be a little bit quicker on the interior to deal with the blocking schemes. So enter, let's just see who Google, so this is definitely a lie, 6'8", 379-pound former offensive tackle Daniel Falele, the fourth-round pick in 2022 out of Minnesota, is now being transitioned into guard. And right now, he is the main person getting the first team reps at right guard. So as of right now, your first team offensive line, and for better or for worse, I'm not being disparaging here, this is kind of just is what it is Ronnie Stanley at left tackle, Andrew Voorhees at left guard out of USC, soon to be all pro Tyler Linderbaum. He's better than Creed Humphrey, don't at me. Also the man who doesn't know anything and just using clearly biases for this. Right guard Daniel Falele out of Minnesota, and then right tackle one of the rookie Rosengarten or Patrick McCarry, the ultimate glue guy on that offensive line. Filele for me is interesting. I think it's, he clearly is a big bruising mauler type who has just proved to be too slow as a tackle, and that's why they kicked him into guard. And maybe you just think, okay, this guy's just going to mush dudes at that guard position, and that's fine. But, I mean, look, I feel like I'm either going to go to Antonio positive or Jace negative here. Like, which one do we want to go to? I don't know at this point in time what it says about the offensive line battle that they're kicking in this guy who was built to play tackle but ended up being too slow. Maybe it's just because they like Filele so much that they want to get him in there in some mix. Or maybe it's like, we literally tried to throw Ben Cleveland in the trash and couldn't get rid of him. Like, we just couldn't get rid of him, so he's just there. I don't know what it says about the offensive line. And again, this team will live and die on the offensive line. We can talk about Derrick Henry all we want. We can talk about Zay Flowers all we want. We can talk about Isaiah Likely breaking out, which I think was going to happen. We can talk about the Mark Andrews situation. We can talk about Lamar coming back to try and win his third MVP. This team is not going in anywhere without that offensive line being settled. And I'm relatively positive about Filele kicking into guard just because I think he's a massive specimen of a human being. But I don't admittedly know how to feel.
Yeah, I don't know what to make. The thing I don't know what to make of the Filele getting the starting reps at right guard the most, yeah, like, is what it says about the other guys. Yeah. If it's lack of belief in them or a belief in him. Just because when we came out of the draft, it seemed like this was just not on anyone's radar as a possibility. It seemed like it was Cleveland with the inside track yet again to possibly getting this right guard spot. And yeah, and then now we get to training camp and Filele's doing it. I guess if I have concerns, certainly, it's like, he's a huge, like, Filele is a huge man for a tackle. Like, 380, 6'8", like, he'd probably be the biggest, like, one of, if not the biggest, like, tackle in the league. And it's, I can't, off the top of my head, think of, like, any guard that's certainly this tall or tip the scales that like much, so it's just hard to even picture. So I guess we'll see it on the field. Presumably these guys will all be playing.
Just think about the offensive line and just like tackle sitting there like in his two-point stance, so his hand isn't down in the dirt, and the guy, the guard, who is in a three-point stance, so his hand is down in the dirt, and he's just towering over Patrick McCarty at right tackle. Like, it's just, it's crazy. It's
crazy. Yeah. Roger Rosengarten, who right now is slated to be the right tackle, is 6'5", 310. So Filele's got 70 pounds and 3 inches on him. That's like crazy. Yeah, so I don't know what to make it from that, but I think it, at least for now, because I don't know, like, I do just keep circling back to Ben Cleveland in particular, because like, there must just be wars between, like, Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh over this guy. Because I think clearly John Harbaugh hates the man. Or it's something. Be it Ben Cleveland's practice habits or something. There's something that is clearly holding him back from seizing this job. Because he's, like, you know, I'm not an expert, but I feel like Ben Cleveland's largely looked fine when pressed into service. But clearly there's something about him that someone doesn't like. And yet he keeps sticking around. This is a guy they drafted. He's in his fourth season. This is the last year of his contract. And it's still just like I'm trying to think of like how many guys, I'm sure there's other, you know, I'm sure we ran through a bunch of them on Random Raven in the past, but just like a guy who they drafted and stuck around all 4 years of his rookie contract and yet never really was a starter. Started what, like 3-4 games max. It's just like a very strange, it's a very strange player, a very strange position to be in. It certainly seemed like this was his job to lose yet again. And it looks like, I don't know, whatever happened this offseason, he's at least lost the inside track because they start training camp with Daniel Filele and what we all thought was going to be his place. So, you know, maybe we'll find out one day about this player, though not likely because it is a player like a third round pick or fourth round pick, whatever Ben Cleveland was. But I just find his whole situation fascinating. And yeah, the fact that we're like started training camp and they were obviously confident in their guys. We talked about this at the draft. They didn't actually draft a guard, right, this year. So they were confident in what they had. So maybe this was the plan all along. But it certainly is fascinating and I am interested to see it on the field just because I want to see what a 6'8", 380-pound guard looks like in practice.
Yeah, I want to say, so I'm going to say, that I think that the potential entirety of this starting lineup is not yet on the roster. I've been saying that for a few months, and I'm going to kind of stick to that and wait until the end of August, early September, to see them make a move. They added, and I don't have the exact dates, but they added John Simpson and Sam Mustafa late last season, last year, I want to say, last offseason, whatever. And they basically took two shots and watched what happened, and one of them worked out and one of them didn't. And they had really low price tags on both players, and that's kind of how they are. They have Josh Jones already that they signed in free agency, who has some experience but not a lot of starting experience as a four-year player, which kind of gives you the Ben Cleveland idea, right, that he's been around a lot and is serviceable, but there's a reason that he didn't start the majority of his games. Josh Jones has 60 games under his belt, 24 career starts, 12 of them coming in the 2021 season with the Arizona Cardinals. So this concerns me, that this specific move of having Filele as a guard. I am not bullish on this. I have concerns about his quickness and movement ability and just every sort of sophisticated run play just getting bottled up because he's on the ground or just kind of mashed up between bodies because he wasn't quick enough to kind of get out of his stance. And I will predict that they have somebody else join the roster to either compete more or, you know, light a fire, or just to have another veteran in there that may or may not then be starting at some point in time. Because I don't get it, and I don't like it. And the Cleveland thing I've already put to the side. You guys have talked about it, and we have seen it for too many seasons to just where there's not faith there. I have concerns about that they just have Voorhees just, oh yeah, he'll be there. And also your rookie non-first rounder at right tackle. Yeah, he'll be fine. Those positions could fall apart at any point in time. So I have concerns about this line, and I do not think that the personnel is settled there at all for this team.
Well, and Tim touched on this, but it is just like remarkable, I think, speaks to the state of the line that you just kind of ran through, Antonio, that just being like, and Ronnie Stanley will be healthy is like part of the assumption like of this team. And by all accounts, he's looked good. You know, he's however many years.
He's the healthiest that he's ever looked. I saw that over the summer, Jace. His ankle is the healthiest it's ever been. That was amazing.
You know what I think, too? You look at his contract, and he is 1,000% getting cut next season. So this is probably our last season of Ronnie Stanley, just the way his void years look are looking. But yeah, it just for like, for a guy that is like so notoriously like, you have no clue. I mean, he missed time last year, right? Didn't Ronnie Stanley miss like 3 or 4 or 5 weeks last year? Like a guy you just can never rely on. The fact that he's one of the two guys they're bringing back from last year's starting group, it is at least marginally concerning to me. I think as we get closer to this season, I am more concerned about the state of the line. But it's just like, it's one of those hard things where it's like, I'm concerned about it, but then you're like, this is what happens when you have to pay your quarterback like $50 yep. million. Dollars. It's 100%. Just like, we can't bring in a, you know, $10 million a year starting guard like they did when they signed Kevin Zeitler or all those kind of things. So, you know, I think it's an incomplete. I agree with you. I wouldn't be shocked if they bring in someone, and I have concerns, but you look around the league, I feel like a lot of teams are in this position where a few weeks ago, you know, and we'll get more into this in the weeks ahead, but I took my first kind of personal step down the futures rabbit hole, looking at Super Bowl odds and division over under or team over unders, all that kind of thing. And you look and you're like, you look at all the top contenders. And of course, besides the Chiefs, who might've actually gotten better, you look at every other team and you say, oh, I think they got worse. And the Ravens are definitely worse than they were last year. I think that's undeniable. But I think a lot of other teams too. And I think it's kind of just sort of the nature of the league. So I don't know. It's unsettled. I am definitely more concerned about it as we get closer to the season. I'm hopeful it's not the disaster that the 2021 campaign was. We all remember how that played out with 15 weeks, 16 weeks of Alejandro Villanueva at left tackle. That wasn't ideal. So hopefully it's not that, but we'll see, I guess. That's why they play the games.
I'll just say quickly, real quick, because I think it's worth noting. This comes from Sharp Football Analysis 4 days ago. Remaining offensive linemen left for free agents. Now, trade could still happen. Guy could get cut, what have you. Tackles, you got, you know, again, spoiler alert, it's all old guys who people think are done. Donovan Smith, David Bakhtiari, still a free agent. DJ Humphries, Jason Peters, Charles Leno, Dwayne Brown, Riley Reiff. You look at the guards. Greg Van Rotten, Phil Haynes, Justin Pugh, Tyree Phillips, if you remember that name, still a free agent. Remember when he got paid and then just turned into nothing? Here's another one. DJ Fluker, still in there as well. Another guy who, you talk about the 2021, just dismal years.
He was around.
He was part of those. And then centers, who could obviously, if you sign him, maybe kick out to guard. Connor Williams, Mason Cole, and Connor McGovern. Scott Quisenberry, some other offensive line names as well. So it's a lot of names, but names that, you know, there's names every year that the league kind of just forgets because people get older, they don't get signed, they end up retiring. Pretty skint out there. Now, that being said, there are the Bryant McKinney types who get cut by the Vikings and then sign with the Ravens in late August and end up winning Super Bowls. So, yeah, we'll have to see what happens.
My last note on the training camp in the off season, and I'm not even going to let my co-hosts address it. It's going to be 10 seconds, and then we move on to the NFL. Rashad Bateman's looked great, guys. He looks really great. He's ready to take on a larger role. He looks hungry. He's aggressive. Rashad Bateman. Fantastic. Well, I'll wait to see it in the season. Okay. Let's turn now to the NFL. Not a lot of things for us to cover on this episode, but two things that are notable for me. One is extension season continued with the quarterbacks. We can add Tua Tagovailoa and Jordan Love to the very highly paid QB list. Tua with a four-year, $212 million extension, and Jordan Love with a four-year, $220 million extension. I don't know, guys. I don't know. I think we're aligned on this as old men yelling at cloud, or just like, you know, millennials becoming boomers. But do they all have to get paid? Do they all have to become the highest paid player in the history of the NFL? I think we say nay. What do you guys think?
It's just so confusing. We talked about this possibly last show, whenever we talked about Trevor Lawrence's extension. And these deals, I get even less than his. Because, like, as much as Trevor Lawrence has been up and down, you see the vision. When you look at Trevor Lawrence, you say, this man has the possibility of throwing the ball farther than anyone in the league. And he's, you know, this is a superstar talent. And I think Tua is certainly accurate. I think Jordan Love has a lot more physical talent. But the fact that Tua gets paid after, like, the knock on him is, like, can he stay healthy? And then also his team loses in December every year. At the end of the season, the Dolphins just run out of steam and then get embarrassed in the playoffs. That's kind of been the MO of his career so far. And then Jordan Love, he has one season as a starter, and now he's tied with Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence, who just signed, as the highest paid players in league history. It's very confusing, and I just, I don't get how it's just like Jared Goff, we throw him in the list from this offseason, how it's just like, oh, it's your turn to get paid. Like, there should be a tier. Like, Patrick Mahomes should be the highest paid player in the NFL, and every other quarterback should make less than him because he's the best quarterback. It should be Patrick Mahomes is at the top, and then it's like Lamar and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. I'm fine throwing them all in the same tier. They're that next tier. And then there should be players who make less than them, and then on down the line. And like, Jordan Love should be paid, but I don't understand why Jordan Love's being paid the highest salary in NFL history for one good season where the Packers went, what, 9-8? Did they end up 10-7 even? And I think they have a really high ceiling, and Jordan Love had, like, one of the best rookie seasons we've seen from a quarterback.
Second
I think
half.
He's going to be great. Yeah, I think he's going to be great. Like, his overall numbers were good, but it's just, that's like such a small sample to be giving that kind of contract to. I don't understand it, and I don't really even know what, like, what can change like, I guess nothing, because Tim, we were talking, not to steal your point, but just maybe to set you up a little, but like, we were talking before the show about how the NFLPA wants this to a degree, because they want to just keep pushing the top salary, and to do that, like, if each next QB becomes the highest paid, that's how they all get higher paid over time. But it just does seem unsustainable, and like, I guess just to flip it back on the Ravens for like half a second, I am glad, A, that they got Lamar's deal done when they did, but it's like, it's a steal now that guys that are worse than Lamar Jackson are getting paid more than Lamar Jackson. Like, both these players, I like them. They're fine. I like Jordan Love more than Tua for his ceiling. But they're not as good as Lamar. And Lamar's like the seventh or eighth highest paid quarterback now. It's crazy. It's just, I don't understand the model at all. And, you know, it's not my money. So at the end of the day, it's fine. I don't know if it's good or bad for the league, really. The NFL's never been more popular, so by that metric, it doesn't matter. But I don't know. It's just weird, and I feel like just if the actual best players were paid the best and everyone slotted it under them, it would maybe be a slightly healthier model. But I don't know. I guess it's working.
But that's not capitalism, baby. It is the NFLPA, and it is exactly what they want. And you know what? Who am I to, you know, side with owners who have the money to pay it, right? Like, and that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, as Jace mentioned earlier, with like, as a kind of a throwaway comment in the offensive line conversation, where, you know, the Ravens can't pay a Kevin Zeitler now because they're paying Lamar Jackson. And not to get into like monetary philosophies, because I'm way too stupid for that, but like, these quarterback salaries are increasing, yet you still are operating under a salary cap where you're only allowed to spend so much money. So it's basically squeezing out all the other positions that you want to pay because the quarterback number is rising so much. We don't see this with running backs. We don't see this with receivers. I guess you sort of see it with receivers. You don't see it with like left tackles, which is one of the most important positions in the league, where it's like, I don't feel like it's always, oh, that guy's now the highest. That guy's now the highest. That guy's now the highest. Here's the list, by the way, of your top 12. And I only say 12 because Patrick freaking Mahomes is 12 in terms of highest paid player. It's Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, and Jordan Love, all at $55 million a year. Tua Tagovailoa at $53.1 million a year, which, by the way, if this is a Miami Dolphins podcast, I think we would do 2 hours on this. Look. Good on the Dolphins, and the Dolphins have been starved of quarterbacks. Like, you go back and look at the list of quarterbacks the Dolphins have had, it's worse than most teams, and you wouldn't really expect that. Tua is one hit away from his career being over. So $53.1 million a year, sure. So Lawrence, Burrow, Love, Tagovailoa, Jordan Goff, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson sits at number 7, Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, God bless Cleveland, Deshaun Watson, Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles injury, and then Patrick Mahomes at $45 million a year. Lamar signed his deal a year ago. A year and what? 3 months ago at this point. 15 months ago, and he was the highest paid player. He is now the 7th highest paid quarterback and player in the National Football League. Jace says the bubble's going to burst. I don't know if it is. Because they're all this talk about the league keeps making money. The salary cap is going to expand exponentially in the next couple of years. And that's why these teams are spending money now, because they know that this is coming, what have you. But it's a weird philosophy for me to get to this point where you're working under a restriction, and yet this one contract is ballooning to a point that's becoming ridiculous. Like Jason said, he makes the point. Pay Mahomes everything he's worth. By the way, Josh Allen isn't on the list of players I just listed out. The 12 players I listed out, Josh Allen isn't there. His agent should be fired like a week ago. Pay Josh Allen that money. Pay Lamar Jackson that money. Pay, name your next quarterback here, whoever it is. The way it's going, where it's Jordan Love had a great 8 games and now we have to pay this guy off of projection, somebody is going to get bit to the point. And it could be, like, not to bring up Tua again, it could be a Tua injury thing, because that's a serious concern for him. Some team is going to get bit to a point where they're like, we can't do this. Where, like, it's great to have the guy, But what do we talk about in sports all the time? You either have the guy or you're waiting for the guy. You know what you don't want to be stuck? The middle. You don't want to be stuck Falcons paying Kirk Cousins $45 million a year. You don't want to be that. Because what? You're going to win the NFC South at 9-8 and maybe win a wild card game? Great. If that's what you're here for, then fine. Congratulations to you. That's not what you should be here for. And I think the way these contracts are ballooning, it's just, I don't know if I should just be like, keep doing it because these teams are stupid enough to do it, but it is crazy to me that it has gotten to this point. But also, I don't see it changing ever because the PA wants this. They're going to drive it till the bubble burst. And you know what? They should, because the owners are billionaires and they should pay the players who are actually making all the money for them. So credit to the players for getting it. But at some point, the structure of how a team is built is going to be completely screwed up because of one of these contracts going horrifically wrong.
I think these owners think that the guys that they are paying are, they are the guy. They have the guy in their building. And they've decided, or they're convinced by external factors that this is the guy and that you need to pay him so that we don't fall into like nothingness or searching for the other guy. The Falcons are playing chess though, Tim. They, you know, they did both things. If you don't remember, they signed the guy to the big money and then immediately also signed a new guy to immediately take over the reins.
Yeah. Was it 28-year-old Michael Penix Jr.? Yeah. That guy, the oldest guy in the draft.
But yeah, I like, do we really see Tua hosting the Lombardi Trophy at any point in time? I don't see it. Again, I could look terrible in a year or two, and that would be great, but the team sure thinks so. I'm sure the fan base, a large percentage of the fan base, thinks that he could do it, and that's how you get the decision of, well, we don't want to start from scratch. This guy could do it, so we want to keep him in the building, and this is the rate. I don't agree with it. I think it's crazy, as you guys have both pointed out. But and then for the inverse, the Mahomes contract was famously the $500 million contract. It was a 10-year, $500 million contract. I wonder if he has any thoughts about whether he should have done. And I guess this doesn't really happen. Cousins has done this really, but this doesn't happen in the NFL. It does happen in the NBA all the time. Were these top players, the LeBron James model, basically, of just one-year deal, two-year deals, one-year deal, two-year deals, get the max, and then move on. If Mahomes is not thinking that, that could have been the play. I understand, in football, the injury risk is higher. You get a 10-year contract, you don't say no. But even if he were to have an injury where he would be out for a year, dare I say 2 years, would he not immediately be the most desirable player on the market, even with the injury after 2 years? So I do wonder if he could have, he obviously considered, but what it would have looked like had he said, you know what, I'm going to actually just do 2-year deal, 3-year deal, and then reassess and start over every few years. Because I'm miles and away the best and most valuable player in the NFL in terms of every metric that you really want to look at. He's certainly not crying with his $50 million per year, but an interesting thought experiment nonetheless, to where if that deal that he signed in 2020 would have expired, you know, let's say he did a 3-year deal in 2020, he would have been up this year, and the number would have been higher than any of these any of these guys. The last thing that I want to bring up is we have a real football game happening in 2 days, if you were listening to this on the published date. Thursday is the Hall of Fame game, an actual football game with pads and NFL players. How many real NFL players we see in this game is always, a question mark. It's Texans versus Bears. I don't really care about the game necessarily. But that means that game exists because there's a Hall of Fame class going in, and it's always exciting. No Ravens this year, where we were on a nice little run there for a little bit. But the class this year is interesting. I'm going to list off the names quickly because they are guys that we all remember. We remember these guys. We watched them play. We watched them terrorize the Ravens in certain aspects. So I'm going to list them off and then just kind of see if you guys have any parting thoughts on specific players in this list, and then we'll get out of here. But I'll start off, first of all, two senior players. That it's a qualification of they last played more than 25 years ago. So that's Steve McMichael and Randy Gradishar are the two senior players going, or senior members going into the Hall of Fame. But the five younger guys that we remember going up against, Dwight Freeney, oh boy, Devin Hester, Andre Johnson, Julius Peppers, and Patrick Willis. A pretty strong class, a pretty strong defensive class. What are your guys, I mean, I'm going to just say Dwight Freeney, but what are your guys' memories of this Hall of Fame class as it relates to just like our youth growing up and loving the NFL with these guys when we were like teens, I want to say, like early teens when these guys were just wreaking havoc across the NFL?
Yeah, this is a primo, like peak football for us. By the way, Devin Hester is a Raven. So the Ravens do have a Raven going into the Hall of Fame. Just saying.
We don't quit.
We're back in it. Obviously, more known for his time with the Chicago Bears. And good on Devin Hester. I think Devin Hester is an interesting one for me, outside of the Ravens angle, of like, I'm glad that this guy gets in, because people have said this before, and I think it's a really great philosophy when you think about a Hall of Fame of, can you tell the story of the sport in that time without this player, or with, you know, and if you can't, then he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Devin Hester is one of those guys where, like, special teams is the third phase of football that never gets talked about. It's a three-phase game, whatever. Devin Hester was the Ed Reed of kick returning, where he was just, every time he touched the ball, he could take it to the house. And I think it's very important for him to be enshrined into, you know, have a legacy in the Hall of Fame. I'm just going to throw this here, and I'm not going to emphasize it anymore, and I want you guys to break it down, maybe Jace more specifically. Very surprised to see Julius Peppers get into the Hall of Fame. I don't know why. I have no numbers to back it up. First round, like, for number one overall pick, always had the talent, but that's a weird one for me. That's like, Peppers always seemed like a guy that was good, not great. I don't know. You tell, like, again, tell the story type of guy. That seems off to me. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the class is different. And maybe if I'm going to make the case against Julius Peppers and make the case for this guy, it's complete purple glasses bias. Dwight Freeney owned Jonathan Ogden. Just absolutely owned him in every single game we played. Jonathan Ogden, one of the best left tackles, if not the best left tackle of all time, could not deal with the inside spin move of Dwight Freeney. Couldn't do it. He would just get torched every single time we played the Colts. I mean, this is like early Patriots, pre-Patriots being the annoying, dominating Patriots of it all. And so the Colts were like always that team. And obviously the whole Baltimore thing, hate that team to high heaven. And the offense couldn't get anything going anyway because Kyle Baller was under center. But anytime they tried to sort of get something going, Dwight Freeney would end it because he had Jonathan Ogden's number. So those are kind of my lasting memories of this class.
Yeah, Freeney actually, I'm not going to say I'm surprised he got in, but he is a guy I think I hold in higher esteem in my head than he probably actually is in the hierarchy. Because Peppers has more sacks than him by like a significant amount, actually. Peppers is fourth all time on the sack list.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. He played forever. That's part of it. Like, he was always very good and would, like, get 10 sacks a year for, like, 16 years or whatever it was. But, yeah, I agree with you. In my head, Freeney certainly terrorized the Ravens more. I guess we only ever saw Peppers every few years. But I think, you know, I'm not surprised he got in. I think he's certainly a worthy entrant. But, yeah, in my headspace, I think of Dwight Freeney being more dominant, more scary. And I think it's for exactly the reasons you laid out. I kind of always have forgotten Andre Johnson hasn't gotten into the Hall of Fame yet. So I'm glad he's there because he was, you know, one of the beasts of that era when it came to receiver, him, Calvin Johnson, a few years later. And I mean, you know, for what it's worth, one of the original Houston Texans stars, you know, there can't be that many Texans players, if any, in the Hall of Fame yet. So I'm sure their fans are excited for that. And, like you said about Hester, I'm glad he got in. He's the best kick returner of all time. You know, guys like you mentioned, like Dante Hall had a run. There's been guys with runs, but Hester is the best, literally has all the records. And Just in general, like, special teams are very underrepresented. I think there's only two or three kickers maybe in the Hall of Fame. There's one punter, I'm pretty sure, or at least exclusively punter. So anything to beef up, I think, the special teams, that'll be good. And I think Hester is deserving. And then Patrick Willis, I'm happy to see, too, just because he was so, so good, but his career was just so brief that you worry about some of these guys whose career maybe didn't last that long. But the NFL, they've proven over the years to be more willing to, you know, Gale Sayers was, I think, a first ballot guy, and he only played like 6 years way back in the day. So the
Terrell
NFL's
Davis
always been a little
too.
Yeah, Terrell Davis, when he got in, it was nice to see him. But I think even, like, I think, like, personally, and this is probably just having watched him more, but, like, Patrick Willis, I think, is a way better player than, like, Terrell Davis was. So, like, in that respect, I'm glad a guy like him got in.
I'll just say this quickly on Patrick Willis. He is the first guy I remember watching as a, obviously, a neutral, you know, Ravens fan, being like, holy crap, that guy could be Ray Lewis. Like, I love all of our Washington fans that listen to this podcast. London Fletcher be damned. You know, any other middle linebacker be damned. Patrick Willis was the first guy that I was like, that dude impacts games from the middle linebacker spot that Ray Lewis, like, this.
And he wore 52, like,
which was definitely helped in my dumb monkey brain, of course. But, you know, I also think that, he was one of those guys, like you said, Jace. I'm glad that obviously his career got cut short. I think Luke Kuechly is going to be the same way when he's up for it, that, you know, he's going to get into the Hall of Fame because of what he did. But good to see a guy like that who, again, made an impact, and you tell the story of football in that time with this player. I think all these guys are deserving.
Yeah, a great class. I mean, I guess on the offensive side, like a peak fantasy football for me class, at least as it comes to the names and the notoriety and the defensive side, certainly. Like, why can't they just stop Dwight Freeney's spin move? He runs at you and spins. Just expect the spin. All right, that's going to do it for us. But very excited to say that the Ravens have a football game coming up in the not-too-distant future. It's about a week and a half away from today. So we will be back next week to preview an actual Ravens football game. Ravens hosting the Philadelphia Eagles in week one of the preseason. A lot of great Harbaugh stuff will be there. No starters will be playing. We'll bring all the action to you in terms of the preview and other things that are happening around the NFL and the rest of training camp. For Tim Horsey and Jace Evans, I am Antonio Barbera. Thank you for listening to us here on Pod Like a Raven, and we will see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.